It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is it good housing news or something else?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis. A few minutes into trading, and we're going to ask that question, where's Wall Street? The S&P is down about a third of a percent. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow off now 7 points, 10,189. European shares are slightly lower as well, about 0.4% for the FTSE in London. And Asian shares lost 2% today, concerns about tighter reins on lending in China. Home prices were up in a majority of the nation's 20 largest markets. The S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index for November nudged upward month to month, but the index is still down more than 5% over the year before. Julie Neiman is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live this morning from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So what does this tell us about the housing market?
Well, probably you're looking at, has the housing market really bottomed? You know, the used home sales plunged nearly 17% in December, but the Case-Shiller news, this is a case of not grim news, is great news. Prices are still declining nationally, but the pace of decline is slowing. But where do we get the bounce? Well, it's a half-off sale out there in California, and people are trying to buy houses again. And across the nation, most of the housing prices didn't hit super bubble prices. If you look at the bubble spots, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, it's still really bad there. We're only at 2002 prices. You have to get back to 1999 prices.
Now, how do rising home prices, now I'm thinking rising home prices, I see 14 out of 20 major markets across the country. How can that equate to bad news, though, or not so good news?
Well, the good news is we have low interest rates. There is housing demand out there. And when people really see good bargains, and of course you have to keep in mind, we still also have that tax credit coming forth for the first time home buyers as well. All of that is giving us a little bit of stimulus in terms of picking up some of the inventory that happens to be out there. We just have so much inventory coming, though. And the huge problem is the banks are not foreclosing right now. They're not being kind and generous. They don't want to take the write-offs. And they can't sell the houses that they're holding in this shadow inventory. Anytime there's any pickup in demand, they push more out into supply. Yeah. That's going to take it down again.
Julie Neiman, thank you.
You bet.
President Obama says he's going to seek a 3-year freeze on domestic spending starting in fiscal 2011. It's an effort to reduce the $1.4 trillion federal budget deficit, but less than a quarter of the budget will be targeted. Defense, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security spending are exempt. So is aid to foreign countries. Now, cutting the deficit is a big growth industry in D.C. these days. Today, the Senate could vote to create a commission to help secure the federal government's fiscal future. From Washington, Brett Neely has more.
The Deficit Cutting Commission is part of a bill that will let the government borrow an additional $1.9 trillion. The government's borrowing has federal budget expert Joe Minerick worried, which is why he's for some kind of commission.
We are piling up debt at a rate faster than our economy is growing.
Many economists say taxes have to rise and spending on Medicare and Social Security has to shrink to tame the deficit. They say a commission would give lawmakers political cover by making the tough proposals that neither party wants to put on the table. But the plan before the Senate isn't realistic, says economist Bruce Bartlett, who advised the Reagan and first Bush administrations.
The problem right now is that there is no real agreement on the necessity or the magnitude or the composition of deficit reduction.
Bartlett blames his own party, the Republicans, who have ruled out any tax increases to fix the deficit.
And I think that's just plain stupid.
Bartlett says until the parties work together, a commission won't accomplish much. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Encouraging news for those with political or business power. Communications firm Edelman will present its annual trust survey at the World Economic Forum in Davos tomorrow. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us live to talk about it. Morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Steve.
Now, this same survey last year showed people's faith in leaders plummeted during the economic crisis. Things better now?
Well, they're not better for the most PR-challenged sector of the economy. That's banking and finance. They already have big distrust and anger problems with the public from bonuses and bailouts. Trust in bankers in the U.S. is down to around 30% now. It was nearly 70% 2 years ago. Used to be the third most trusted industry. Now it's down at the bottom with insurance.
And what about the rest of our institutions? Government, businesses that aren't banks, the media?
Well, the media has also suffered. Trust is at all-time lows. But other than that, confidence is returning in the last year. In the U.S., we saw more than half of people trust businesses to do what's right. We trust CEOs more. We also trust non-governmental organizations more. And perhaps most important, trust in government. It's actually been going up steadily since the recession began, and it's now at nearly 50% nationwide.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman with this. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
And this week, Marketplace's Stephen Beard will be reporting from Davos at the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum. Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, January 26, 2010, at marketplace.org. In Beijing today, China and Taiwan began talks on what could be an historic trade deal. Politically, the two sides have been rivals for six decades, but the economic thaw may be a game changer. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Asia correspondent Scott Tong reports.
Proponents say a trade deal could create 250,000 jobs in Taiwan. Taiwanese insurance companies, banks, and auto parts makers would face lower tariffs and other barriers in the vast China market. Taiwan-based businessman Mark Foreman says the island territory needs the new business. Its longtime old customer isn't buying.
The American customer demand will probably never see the levels that it did prior to the almost implosion that we had last year. So I think it behooves Taiwan to have a lot more access to the Chinese market.
Beijing makes that argument, as does Taiwan's ruling party. But the Taiwanese opposition thinks the trade deal will create losers, like farmers who won't be able to compete. And as Taiwan opens its doors to China, economist Chen Liying wonders who Beijing will really send over.
China always will put some spies within their student group or whatever.
Trade deal foes are spooked about Beijing's true intentions. The talks are expected to last till May, at the very least. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
With all the news of big bonuses and bailouts, how much anger is there against corporate America? Today, out west, we're going to find out at the ballot box. From Oregon Public Broadcasting, April Baer reports.
From day one, the campaign to pass Measures 66 and 67 has been a study in class warfare.
Wall Street took billions in bailouts.
A lot of these same corporations only pay the $10 corporate minimum tax.
A nasty fight over the state budget ended with Democratic leaders proposing two changes: a tax increase for Oregon households earning more than $250,000 per year, and changes to the way Oregon taxes businesses, which have only had to pay a $10 maximum since 1931. Today's results are a possible barometer of what to expect in November. Some also see it as a test tube for campaign finance. This election cycle, the rest of the country will get in step with a longtime Oregon reality: no limits for corporate and union spending on political causes, thanks to a recent Supreme Court decision. Steve Novick is a spokesman for the Yes on 66 and 67 campaign.
You would think that if these measures were going to destroy business in Oregon, that business folks would have raised billions of dollars to oppose these measures.
In fact, the union-backed Yes campaign has outspent business-funded opponents by almost $1 million. In Portland, Oregon, I'm April Baer for Marketplace.
Recovery or no recovery, many Americans have gone hungry in this economic downturn. A new Gallup survey today found nearly one in five people say they've struggled to pay the grocery bill in the last year. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports pollsters sought to answer one question.
Have there been times in the last month when you didn't have the money to buy food that you and your family needed? In the most recent report, more than 18% of Americans answered yes.
That's just a horrendous number.
James Weil is president of the Food Research and Action Center. He says the numbers are slightly better than a year ago. That's because food is cheaper, and this stimulus package boosted food stamps and other programs. Still, Weil says he expects the nation to feel pangs of hunger throughout the coming years as stimulus money runs out.
This is not evidence just of a short-term economic problem. This is evidence of a long-term national hunger problem that we have to do something about.
He says the government needs to step up its focus on hungry children. Nearly one in four households with kids say they're having trouble putting food on the table. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
You may think the only gridiron action right now is a Super Bowl, but to college football fans, this winter has been a crazy offseason of big-name coaching moves. As Ethan Lindsay reports, the coaching scramble's been escalating in recent years.
Fans were shocked when head coach Pete Carroll announced he was leaving the University of Southern California. Soon after, USC lured Lane Kiffin to Los Angeles with a $4 million a year contract. Problem is, Kiffin was the head coach at the University of Tennessee, a job he'd held for just 14 months.
It was very hard on me, and it was a hard decision for us. I don't think there's another job I would have left for.
Tennessee replaced Kiffin with Louisiana Tech's head coach. Louisiana Tech, in turn, plucked its replacement from the Arizona coaching staff. And these coaching changes aren't just about the guys at the top. College coaches bring recruits, alumni donations, and ticket sales. So when a coach leaves, it can leave a program in shambles. Many in college football say the recent job merry-go-round represents a scary new trend.
We entered what I call the mercenary era, where you go out and get guys who are not familiar at all with your program but are very good at what they do.
Clay Travis is a college football writer living in Nashville. He says in 2008, Tennessee jumped on that coach-for-hire bandwagon, firing longtime coach and Tennessee native Phil Fulmer and replacing him with Kiffin, who had no ties to the state.
I think that the Lane Kiffin hiring will make a lot of athletic directors predisposed to at least a consideration of how does this coach fit our culture.
Travis says, take for example who Tennessee hired to replace Kiffin. His name's Derek Dooley. He's from the South and the son of Vince Dooley, the legendary Georgia football coach. At the USC bookstore in L.A., Pete Carroll's picture is everywhere. But Carroll is now collecting a $7 million paycheck from the NFL's Seattle Seahawks. So having been bitten by the mercenary bug themselves, are USC fans worried about their new hire? Not one bit, says Skylar Smith, a USC grad student.
This was his dream job, and I don't think that this chance would have come again for him. For me, as a fan, I think it's a great choice because he's young.
Most of Smith's family went to the University of Tennessee, but she has no regrets about stealing their coach. And that may be exactly why the mercenary coach will continue to ply his trade for the foreseeable future. In Los Angeles, I'm Ethan Lindsay for Marketplace.
A week ago, Massachusetts voters elected Republican Scott Brown to fill Ted Kennedy's longtime Democratic seat. Now it's become a lot harder for Democrats to get an agenda through Congress. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is with us this morning to look ahead. Morning, Bob.
Good morning, Steve.
So now, after the last tumultuous week, is health care reform dead?
Well, something will be enacted that the president can call the first installment of health care reform, probably including regulations of the health insurance market, such as stopping insurers from denying coverage on the basis of pre-existing conditions. Democrats remember what happened in 1994 when they were in power but failed to pass any health care reform bill. Now, the problem is Republicans remember it, too, which means Senate Republicans won't give that 60th vote without a huge fight. Senator Olympia Snowe could still be the dealmaker.
And what about other items on the congressional agenda, such as the cap and trade?
I'm afraid no way. The drop in public support for the health care bill, combined with a growing anti-incumbent mood, is making Congress even more gun-shy than usual.
And what about financial regulatory reform?
Oh, that's looking much more likely, Steve. The lesson Democrats took away from Scott Brown's victory last week is the surge of populist anger among voters. But it's hard to act populist without a target for your indignation. Now, Tea Partiers and Republicans are targeting big government. So the easiest target for the Democrats are the fat cats on Wall Street, as the president called them. Problem is, there's no agreement in Congress on what should be done, and the president's proposals, you know, for limiting the size and riskiness of banks and what they can do if they have secured deposits are still on the drawing board.
Now, speaking of the president, what's he going to say in tomorrow's State of the Union address?
Well, I don't expect him to be contrite or defensive about where things are right now, Steve. My betting is we'll hear about some new initiatives to jumpstart jobs and a commission to devise ways to reduce the budget deficit. The president will also reaffirm his commitment to health care reform and reforming Wall Street. The most important thing he has to do tomorrow will be to connect the dots and give Americans an overall vision of where he wants to take the country at this point. And so far, he hasn't done that, and that has hurt him.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich and professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Bob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
In Indiana, a man and woman are reportedly knocking on doors asking people for $52. Help, they say, for a state representative to save electricity. Nice gesture if the representative's office knew about the plan. Police say if you want to help save electricity, turn off some lights. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.